We are on air for Fans of Racing Radio, and tonight we will have our Charlotte NASCAR weekend preview with Hot Topic Sound Off at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. In the first half hour tonight, we will cover both short track racing news as well as the ARCA Menards Series is racing this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway. We'll include a few updates from the ARCA East and West as well. At 9 o'clock, we have our pre-race audio from Max Goody Aris. He is the driver of the number 37 AM Racing Chevrolet this weekend in the Camping World Truck Series. So we'll hear what he has to say heading into the weekend of racing at Charlotte this weekend. Then at 9:15, we'll do our Truck Series preview at Charlotte Motor Speedway. At 9:30, we'll finish up with the Xfinity Series and the Cup Series preview of the races at Charlotte Motor Speedway. 10 o'clock is NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off with our Fan for Racing crew. And joining me for tonight's show is our co-host, Jay Huseman. Welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. I appreciate you giving me a couple minutes here. I'm still getting my notes and everything set up, running a little late tonight. Got a big weekend of racing, though, right there at the hub of NASCAR, the Charlotte area, as well as some other stuff across the country when we talk about the short track racing. And then I know we got some hot topics yet again here tonight.
Yes, indeed. Okay, now, again, I'm going to make apologies up front for any dog noises that you hear in the background. I'm still here in Texas. We have three dogs in the house. And every little noise can set off all three of them. So if you hear me mute and I'm not here for a few minutes, Jay, if you can pick up the slack there for me, I'd appreciate it.
All right. Well, we'll throw a fourth one in. As long as we're going to put blame, I'll put blame on Bogey, too. He's normally pretty good, but we'll see how he behaves tonight.
Okay, so we'll try to make we'll make do the best we can at any rate. But just want to give everybody a heads up that that's kind of what we're dealing with in the background here. But let's go ahead and get to the short track racing news. I know that there's some racing out at Lucas Oil Raceway, or I guess it's the Indianapolis Lucas Oil Raceway. I forget what the new name is now. They are doing some USAC racing this weekend, and it ties into the Indianapolis 500 that's taking place at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. So that's kind of cool to see happening.
It is, and I know you joke about it. That's one that the name change has been, yeah, IRP, ORP, LORRP. but no matter what you call it, it is an awesome facility. I know that's one of those you talk about having regrets. When Dalton, my son, and I went to the Indianapolis or the Brickyard 400 Saturday, we should have gone over at that time. Xfinity Series raced over across town. So we probably should have gone over to it, but didn't. But, yeah, if you get the chance, you definitely want to go to that track. And I think it is back to Lucas Oil Raceway Park.
Well, the way they've got it listed here is 2 o'clock tomorrow, May the 27th. It's the 2022 USAC Carb Night Classic at Indianapolis Raceway Park. I guess they've gone back to IRP.
Well, okay, so yeah, there we go, back to IRP.
So again, I did get a chance to see a race out there several years back now. I saw an Xfinity Series race at IRP, and I fell in love with that track right away, and would love to see some back racing at that track again, for that matter. But yeah, the USAC Carb Night Classic will be there 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon at the Indianapolis Raceway Park. So I think that's a big one as it ties into the Indianapolis 500.
You're right. And it's one of those towns, and Indianapolis is known for that, of a racing town, not just for the Indy 500, but when NASCAR brought the Brickyard in, and situations like this where they have combo events, we've seen other races in that area. I know they have a IndyCar race there, I believe, in the streets of downtown Indianapolis. So again, always a great racing community, great city as in a whole. You get to spend some time there. I will tell you this, if you want to play the golf course that goes inside of Indianapolis Motor Speedway, you better be somebody a name, because, yeah, you can't get in like 2 weeks prior or 2 weeks after around any kind of race like that. I just tell you that.
Yeah, that is, I'm sure, right on the mark. Now, just so you know, for those folks that can't get out to IRP this weekend, Indianapolis Raceway Park, it will be available to watch via live streaming at Flow Sport Racing. So if you haven't already subscribed, I would highly recommend it. It's going to be a fantastic race there. There's a lot of racing that's going to take place this weekend. It's one of the biggest race weekends of the year. And don't think that just because you get the big races like the Indianapolis 500, all three series in NASCAR are racing this weekend out at Charlotte Motor Speedway for one of their biggest races of the year. There's a lot of short track racing going on right in your neighborhood, somewhere around the country. And we highly encourage people to take part in those races that are taking place this weekend as well.
Well, you're right about that, Sharon. I know right here in Columbus, they got one going on over at the MAG. So I promise you, you said it. This is a huge race weekend. I understand it's Memorial Day. A lot of teams doing vacations, and a lot of them do them in conjunction with races. And keep in mind what Monday Memorial Day is about. But there is a lot of racing going on. If that's how you choose to spend your time, please go out and visit your local track.
Yes, and there are way too many for us to mention all of them here on Fan for Racing Radio tonight. But you can go to flowracing.com, and they have a tab there. It's their schedule for the weekend, and you can see every single race that's taking place. And there is a link for you to watch that race when it becomes available. So a lot of weekly racing that's taking place this week. We mentioned, that's the NASCAR weekly touring series, the Advanced Auto Parts series at a number of tracks throughout the country. We mentioned the USAC racing that's taking place, a lot of dirt racing taking place this weekend, NASCAR Wheel and Modified racing taking place this weekend. There's just so much that's taking place. Like I say, it's really hard to mention all of them. But also, another place where you can find good racing is at Racing America. And they've done some really great articles here. 10 things you should know about Saturday's Show Me the Money race, the Wear and Modified Super Late Model, actually postponed their Chan Hinkle Memorial 138 because of poor weather that's expected over the weekend. So hopefully we won't see too much of that this weekend. They've got some throwback articles up. And those are always fun to watch and to read, I should say. And, oh, by the way, Jay, if you are not a subscriber to Racing America, the TV subscription rates are going to be increasing. Current subscribers are not affected by that increase, but any new subscribers we'll have to pay the higher fee. But let me tell you, even with the higher fee, you're going to get a whole lot of racing. And they explain why they're raising the prices in that article over at racingamerica.com.
Well, you know, it's one of those, you hate to see it. I understand the business side of it and the economy. But, yeah, when you break it down of what you pay per month, the amount of tracks you get to go to without having to travel, or whatever, Where's Owen? He can do our analytics and break it down numbers-wise. But, yeah, what you're paying per race ends up to be like a dollar or two. And like I said, if you're not into traveling or can't afford to, or some of these obviously are on the other side of the country, you still get to see. So it is definitely, if you're into racing, a value to look at. And, yeah, you want to get – I don't know when that starts. I hadn't seen that one yet. But when it starts, you want to get the logged in and signed up to prevent that from happening. Fortunately, already signed up, so don't have to worry about that.
The increase starts June 1st. So it's just a few days, and that increase will start. Okay. Some of you will remember we've had Allie Kern on our show. And that's when she was racing in the Arkham Menard series. She is now Allie Kern Dukeshire, and she's making a return in the ARCA CRA Super Series at Jennerstown. So she's one of two females that will be racing that series. But I saw that, and it's really kind of cool to see that she is back behind the wheel. So I guess I was trying to see if I could find out who the other female is going to be that's racing, but she's one of two that will be in that race. So you'll want to check that out as well.
You're right. Always exciting to see that, especially ones that, for whatever the reason of the layoff, I know some of it's sponsorship, some of it's other things, but to see a driver like that come back and continue with their dream is great to see.
Okay. Now, just like we mentioned at Flow Racing, the same thing is at Racing America. If you click on Watch or Live Events, you will be able to see the tracks that are coming up and the racing that is coming up that you can watch over at Racing America. They've got a Carolina Speedway here, Claremont Motorsports Park. There's also Five Flags Speedway. You've heard us talk a lot about that track. Lakeview. There's just so, again, so many different racing events that are taking place this weekend, including Slinger Speedway. The Elite 8 Super Late Models will be racing there on Sunday. So, again, don't miss any of the racing action. You can always check out the news as well as live streaming events at Racing America as well.
Well, Sharon, I wanted to give one more shout out on the Flow Racing side. We talked about it. I know it's still, I guess, a little less than a month away, but I saw it posted publicly today. They are going to be here in Columbus, Mississippi, June 11th for the Southern All-Star Super Late Model Dirt Series at the Bullring, just down from my house. So again, Flow Racing is out there and covering all of these tracks.
And that's what I say. A lot of these tracks may not be tracks that you can get to personally, but you can still see the racing that's going on. So that's really cool to hear that these guys will be right in your neighborhood, Jay. What was the name of the track again?
It's Columbus. The one on the east side of town is Columbus Speedway, the baddest bull ring in the South.
Okay. I should know that by now, right?
I've mentioned it a time or two, I think.
I see Eldora Speedway on here as well. So that's pretty cool. Again, I apologize for the dogs barking in the background. I'm the only one here. And I expect it's probably going to get really noisy when everybody starts to arrive back home. So, again, my apologies. Okay.
I heard a little bit in the background, but it's not bad.
It's not bad. That's good to know. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the ARCA Menard Series. They've got a race, the General Tire 150 is taking place at Charlotte Motor Speedway this weekend, May the 27th at 6 p.m. Eastern. It will be televised on Fox Sports 1, so everybody should be able to watch this one And there's some really good things going on here. It's a tight Arkham and Arch series points thing that's going on in this series. The race, as I mentioned, starts at 6 p.m. Eastern, but there's also radio coverage that's available on MRN and SiriusXM, actually channel 391, and the online channel is 981. You can also get race coverage at ArcaRacing.com. This is a 1.5-mile paved trioval. They will be racing 100 laps. They will have practice on Friday and qualifying starting at 12 o'clock Eastern time until 12:45. And again, the race starts at 6 p.m. Eastern time. Okay, so what do we need to know going into this Arkham and Arch Series race at Charlotte? Besides the fact that the points are pretty tight.
Well, there's a couple of things. You mentioned it being on FS1. All the points are the same all the races are the same as far as points. But this really is a big race. Again, you're in the NASCAR, the heart of NASCAR there at Charlotte Motor Speedway. But for the general tire 150, it's the fifth race of the 2022 Arkham and Arch Series season. Previous winners on the year, they've included Corey Heim at Daytona, Taylor Gray at Phoenix, and then Nick Sanchez making a big run at that point. So you talk about Talladega and Kansas winner. So big weekend as far as points, the points being that tight. You're showcasing in front of the Charlotte area where all the NASCAR owners and teams will be. So I think it's a huge weekend for the Arkham Menards Series right there in Charlotte.
Absolutely. The Arkham Menards Series has raced 23 previous times at Charlotte Motor Speedway. And did you mention these previous winners?
No, not from those. Those are the previous at Charlotte, not for the year.
Oh, okay. These are the previous winners at Charlotte in those 23 previous times that they've raced there. Curtis Turner, Tim Steele, Mark Thompson, Gary Latin, Frank Kimmel, big name in ARCA, Adam Petty, Mario Grossman, Kirk Schelmerding, Lyndon Amick, Ryan Newman, Terry Earnhardt, Ryan Hemphill, Brandon Jones, Ty Majeski, and Ty Gibbs. Ty Gibbs, the most recent winner.
And that list right there, that tells you how important this is. Some of the drivers that have come through the series, but also whether it be on a limited schedule, race that race at Charlotte and picked up victories. A couple of Hall of Famers in there, as a matter of fact. Now, you mentioned Tim Steele. He leads all the drivers with 4 Arkham Menards Series wins at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Him and Frank Kimmel, 2 very well-known drivers within this Arkham Menards Series, has 3 wins. And then Kurt Schelmerding picked up 2. All the other drivers have 1, and that includes Mark Thompson, Gary Layton, Adam Petty, Mario Gosselin, Lyndon Amick, Jeff Fultz, and Ty Majeski, which those were all their first career Arkham Menards Series wins coming there from Charlotte. For Layton, Petty, Amick, and Fultz, it was actually their only career series win.
Okay, and now when you look at Curtis Turner, Kirk Schelmerding, and Brandon Jones, they all scored their final or most recent career victory at Charlotte Motor Speedway. So that's kind of an interesting tidbit there as well. Ryan Newman holds the Arkham Menards Series qualifying record at Charlotte. That was set in 2000 at 28.911 seconds. 186.780 miles per hour. So that record still holds. And I bet there's a few drivers that would love to break that record this weekend.
Oh, without a doubt, without a doubt. And again, I just look at some of the history here that we see some of these drivers. You got Tim Steele. He's holding the Arkham Menards Series race record at Charlotte Motor Speedway, set back in 1996. At 138.730 miles per hour. Now, as we look at this current year real quick, Rev Racing, we got teammates Nick Sanchez and Rajah Caruth. They enter that general tire 150 tied for the Arca Menard Series Championship points lead. We'll get to that as we end our session here on Arca Menard Series. But they both have 155 points, and that's three more points than GMS Racing's Daniel Dye.
And Daniel missed a race, so that's really saying something for him. Gus Heen and Daniel Dye both lead the series with three top five finishes so far this year. Dean Dye and Nick Sanchez, along with Roger Caruth, lead the series with three top ten finishes so far this year. So pretty cool to see these guys having the seasons that they're having.
Actually, Sharon, I got to correct you there as we get into this next section. If you remember, Daniel Dye got reinstated. He did actually, I think it was the Friday before that it was made official. He did start that race. He had a rough day, but he did get to start that race.
Oh, okay. It might have been an East race that he missed. But, okay, that's
yeah,
cool
that was
see.
One of them. But he is one of 10 drivers now that have started all four Arca Menard Series races so far in 2022. Rajah Caruth leads all with a 5.75 average finish, and he's just in front of Daniel Dye at a 6.25. Nick Sanchez is at 7.25. Tony Bredinger at 14.5. Amber Balkane at 16.75. Now, others who have started all four races are D.L. Wilson, our guest we've had on a couple times, Greg Van Alst. Zachary Tinkle was just on not too long ago. Bryce Hoggenberg, and then Brad Smith.
All right. And Corey Heim actually leads the Arca Menard Series with 141 laps led. That's followed by Sammy Smith in second at 79 laps at the front of the field, followed by Drew Dollar with 51, Taylor Gray and Nick Sanchez with 43, Daniel Dye with 32, Roger Caruth with 7, and Sean Court with 6 laps led. Daniel Dye and Roger Caruth also have both completed 100% of the 402 possible competition laps so far this season. Sanchez has completed every lap except for one. So very, very cool to see these guys being as competitive as they are.
Well, and that tells you right there how competitive it is, like you said, and why they're at the top of the points. There are two of them tied in points. Daniel Dye 3 points back. And I didn't realize that. That means Daniel Dye got back on the lead lap to complete the 402 possible laps. I knew he had to make a comeback from last race, but I didn't realize he had gotten back on the lead lap.
All right as we... Yeah, I'm still here. We've got a lot to look forward to. We've got a few minutes here. Let's hit the entry list and make sure we cover everybody that's going to be in this race.
All right, that's loading up for me here. I'll start at the bottom. We got Zachary Tinkle mentioned in the 06 Wayne Peterson machine. Chevrolet, Nate Mueller as the crew chief. And Josh White's going to be in an 03 Ford, owned and crew chief by Alex Club.
Okay. We also have Dick Doheny in the number 01 from Boston Spa, New York. He'll be driving the Fast Track Racing Ford for Hillenbergs. Liz Caparilli is the crew chief, so a female crew chief there for Dick Delaney this weekend. Also, Jacob Cantor is the crew chief for the number 81 that will be driven by Brandon Jones for Gibbs Racing. He hails from Atlanta, Georgia. He'll be driving the Menards-Tight Bounty Ford this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway. So he's doing some double duty there.
He is. Again, these guys returning to their roots. Cell phone team, the number 73 Ford, that's going to be Andy Jankowicz coming out of Tonawanda, New York, with Mike Dayton as his crew chief. And then the number 69 Kimmel machine, owner and crew chief Bill Kimmel. Driver will be Will Kimmel in that Toyota.
In the number 57 will be Brian Duzat, hailing from Concord, North Carolina. He'll be driving in the brother-in-law's Motorsports Chevrolet with Bob Rahui as his crew chief. And Terry Strange will be the crew chief for Brad Smith this weekend, driving the number 48 Chevrolet for his own race team.
Mentioned the GMS machine, the 43 of Daniel Dye several times. He'll be crew chief to by Chad Bryant, as usual. And another regular moving up in the standings, Christian Rose with the West Virginia Tourism sponsorship on the number 42 Chevrolet. Bruce Cook as the owner helping out as well, but Sean Samuels, the crew chief.
Okay, and the number 36 from Elmwood, Illinois is Tim Monroe. He'll be driving the Fort Worth Screen Plant Ford for James Huff, with Richard Burgess on top of the pit box. And Jim Long will be on top of the pit box for Greg Van Oaks. And his number 35 team, he'll be driving that number 35 CB Fabricating Ford this weekend at Charlotte.
In the Icon Ford, number 30, coming out of Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, Amber Balcane in the Mark Rett owned and crew chief to car. And then Tip Richmond out of Ottawa, and that's not Canada, that's Ottawa, Illinois. He'll be in the Circle Track Warehouse number 27 Chevrolet, owned by David Richmond. Crew chief is Daryl Phillips.
Kevin Reed Jr. is the crew chief for the Venturini number 25, driven by Tony Breidinger from Hillsboro, California, the FP Movement Toyota. Driving the number 23 this weekend for Brett Holmes and Stacey Holmes' machine is Connor Mosack, hailing from Charlotte, North Carolina. He will be driving that number 23 with Shane Huffman on top of the pit box.
I know you can search it. Go back and find an interview they had on Race Hub about Connor Mosack if you want to learn some more about him.
Yes.
That was a great interview. Now, a regular dangerous pair, we got Shannon Roosh, crew chief, in for Corey Heim in that number 20, Crescent Tools Toyota for Venturini Motorsports. And speaking of Venturini, apparently Drew Dollard decided he wants to stick with racing. He's in the number 18, Lynx Capital Toyota for Kyle Busch Motorsports. Mark McFarlane going to be the crew chief there.
Yeah, big competition there between those two. Parker Chase will be in the number 15 Venturini machine, and his crew chief is Kevin Reed. Dick Delhaney, I thought I saw that he's driving. He's going to be driving and crew chiefing double duty for the Hillenburg number 12. Tommy V. Jr. will be behind the wheel of that Chevrolet. And in the number, it's your turn.
All right. Yeah, the number 11 there is Tony Constantino coming out of Mansfield, Ohio. He's in a Hillenburg Toyota. In the Hillenburg Ford, number 10, that's Ryan Huff with Richard Burgess. And we saw that name already, too. But some of these guys are getting listed more than once.
As
the crew
really
chief for Ryan Huff.
All right. And the number 8 is Sean Corr from Goshen, New York. He'll be driving the Trans Group Chevrolet for their race team, and Mike Cheek is the crew chief. Jeremy Petty is the crew chief for the Eric Caldell R.A. Wilson Toyota, driven by Matt Wilson behind the wheel of that number 7 vehicle.
And the last two we got on the entry list, that's your Rev Racing machines, obviously involved in the points battle, tied up atop. The number 6 out of Washington, D.C. is Rajah Karuth, and Brad Parrott as the crew chief. And then the number 2, and I think we're going to hear some audio from him, Nick Sanchez. He'll be in the number 2 Chevrolet. Again, another one owned by Max Siegel. Matt Buescher is the crew chief on that number 2.
Yeah, actually our audio, Jay, is going to be from Max Gutierrez.
Oh. There we go. I apologize for that. You're right. I saw that. You were going with Max Gutierrez. Has graduated with come from Rev Racing, but
yes.
Moving up.
Yes, he's going to be driving the number 37 AM Racing Chevrolet in the truck series this week. And we do have some pre-race audio from him as he gets ready and prepares. This is actually his debut with AM Racing in that number 37. And they took some time to kind of chat with him this week. And we're going to listen to his pre-race audio. And the length is actually 14, almost 15 minutes long. We're going to listen to about half of that. And then Jay and I will have some comments. So let's hear what he has to say.
There we go.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, you?
Doing well. Thank you so much for spending some time with us this afternoon.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, well, you have an exciting weekend coming up this weekend. Max is making his NASCAR Junior World Truck Series debut at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Max, to start us off here, tell us how exciting that is for you and maybe how you're preparing.
Well, I have no words to describe how I feel right now. I'm in the NASCAR building right now, and I got a meeting, so everyone was excited, even me, and I didn't sleep like the whole week. So I need to rest a lot, and how I prepare myself is just a coaching seminar. After these interviews, I'm going to the shop to have a piece of practice because it's going to be the first time I'm in the truck, and also we're going to have just 30 minute practice on Friday, so we're not going to have many time, so we need to practice. And yeah, I want to thank all the people behind this project. Everyone has made an excellent job, and we're going to try to do our best this Friday.
Well, we are very excited for you. We will go ahead and questions from the media now. If you have a question for Max, please raise your hand within the Zoom platform or type in the chat, and we'll be sure to get to you. Who would like to start us off? All right, we'll start with Cole Kismana. Go ahead, Cole.
Thank you, Samantha. Hey, Max. You mentioned not getting too much sleep in preparation for this race. But what are you doing in those hours that you're laying there awake? Do you get some additional preparation in there, or what does that look like?
Well, actually, I have many exams because I'm studying international business back in Mexico. So I have a little stress, and also I watch the, when I have time, watch other races in the past years, so I can gain more experience and watch what they're doing or what they wanted to do in the race and the mistakes that they have made.
Thank you, Max. Good luck this weekend.
Thanks so much.
Any additional questions for Max? We will go to Eduardo Olmo. Go ahead. I think you're muted.
Yes. I'm going to switch to Spanish if you don't have any issues.
Absolutely. Go for it.
Thank you. Max, gusto saludarte. Felicidades por este anuncio. ¿Cómo te sientes al respecto?
Pues la verdad que muy agradecido con todas las personas. Hay muchas que han puesto su parte, muchos patrocinios, y les quiero agradecer. Estoy sinceramente agradecido con ellos, si no ellos no estaríamos aquí. Y la verdad estoy muy ansioso a saber qué va a pasar el día del viernes. Vamos a tener muy poco tiempo de práctica. Y en la carrera van a estar 36 camionetas, que son muy competitivas, ya vimos las carreras pasadas. Entonces, pues, tratar de hacer lo mejor que podamos, sin errores y aprender lo más que podamos.
Pero es todo el puri este fin de semana, ¿no? Porque tienes el compromiso en Chihuahua, la carrera de NASCAR en México, ¿no?
No, la carrera de Chihuahua es el fin de semana.
Ah, ok.
Sí. Y una vez estamos...
Bueno, y la experiencia en NASCAR, ¿cómo crees que... Bueno, ¿cómo que desde qué te ha servido hasta ahora?
Pues... Me va a servir mucho porque el año pasado que corrimos el campeonato completo de la East, coming up pues fue distinto, fue bastante, porque por ejemplo las llantas son muy diferentes a los míos que los de México. Entonces, pues adaptarnos, las trucks ahorita usan el mismo motor, transmisión, llantas un poco diferentes al Arca. Entonces, pues también las pistas son muy diferentes, ¿no? Ya conducimos Charlotte el año pasado en el Arca. Llevamos muy bien, estamos en el top 5, pero desgraciadamente un contacto hizo que tuvimos que entrar a pit y perdimos muchas vueltas, pero ya estamos con el pit.
Perfecto. Felicidades, te estaremos siguiendo.
Gracias.
Thank you, Samantha.
Next question will come from Mitchell Brewer. Go ahead, Mitchell.
Max, thank you for the time today. With this being your first truck start, I know the nerves are probably really high. With that said, are you trying to enjoy the entire experience by itself, or are you looking forward to just getting to the race?
Well, yes, I'm kind of nervous, but I have confidence that our team is going to do a great job. Our sponsor is going to be there. Tuffield, Bolsavie, and Tosar are going to be in the track. So we're going to try to do our best. And after this interview, I already said we're going to have the pit stop practice. So all the mistakes that we can do are going to be less mistakes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional questions for Max? Well, Max, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and stop it there with regard to the interview with Max. For those of you who speak Spanish, we got a little extra there for the Spanish listeners. I think he asked him what his goals were for the weekend, and I don't know. I could be wrong about that, but I know Max says that he'd like to finish inside the top 5. So that would be kind of cool if he's able to do that in his debut race at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Well, I'm not even going to try and attempt to translate Spanish. That was not my my language in high school. So, yeah,
well,
what's that?
No, that's okay. It's not mine either. I happen to understand a little bit of it, so I'm just catching little bits and pieces is all that I can catch. So go ahead, Jay.
Those are some lofty goals, and that's great to see. I mean, you want to have confidence in your team. And I was just reflecting on it, thinking back to when we first started hearing his name as he was making his name, coming out of New Mexico, the country of Mexico with Rev Racing, and to see where he's at now. And I know one of the questions asked is, you know, are you really just absorbing it and enjoying it? Are you super focused on it? And that's tough for a driver. You're talking about your truck series debut at Charlotte Motor Speedway. We saw the list of drivers that got their first win there at Charlotte Motor Speedway. So I'm sure that's a tough call. But like he said, he's still focused on running good. The confidence he has in the team that the top 5 is their goal. You know, the truck series, we've seen it. That's a lofty goal. That's a tough task to perform. But to see him come out there and be like, hey, that is our goal.
Yes, indeed. And Max Gutierrez is a champion in Mexico, so he has reason to have some confidence in his ability and in his team. He's racing, as I mentioned, in the AM Racing Chevrolet this weekend, the number 37. So he brings some experience with him into the Camping World Truck Series, and we'll see what he is able to do. He's raced in the Arca Menard Series and has done very, very well there and has finished in the top 10 and won races in the Arca Menard Series. That doesn't guarantee a top 5 finish in the Truck Series, But it's going to be fun to see what he does do in that series. And I'm excited to see the international flair that's coming into the truck series this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway. One of the biggest stages he could make his debut at is right there where NASCAR is, has some offices. So that's pretty cool.
Well, and I think that leads to what we mentioned, just the confidence he has and the knowing of his ability to do so. You know, so we see some drivers, and I know some of it ties into sponsorship, all kinds of deals, but some of them want to start a track they're more familiar with. You know, if you're a road course racing, not say expert, but better at it. But to have that confidence to start right there, like you said, right in the hometown of NASCAR, tells you he's got to have all the confidence in the world in himself and his team and where they're going to come in at.
Yes, indeed. We're definitely looking forward to seeing him in that Camping World Truck Series race that's taking place on Friday night. In fact, we might as well get into the Truck Series event. That race is taking place at the North Carolina Education Lottery 200 at Charlotte Motor Speedway this Friday, May the 27th at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. It will be televised starting with pre-race coverage on Fox Sports 1 at 8 p.m. Eastern and radio coverage on MRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They will be covering a distance of 201 miles over 134 laps, stage one ending on lap 30, stage two also 30 laps ending on lap 60, and the final stage ending on the last lap, lap 134, for 74 laps. So, Jay, if you can get us started, I am going to go check on the puppies here and see if I can't get them calmed down just a little bit.
All right, I can do that. Just let me know when you're back. I'll keep moving up until you get back. Got a little more information here on Max Gutierrez as we slide into the Truck Series. Again, coming out of Mexico, he's going to make his Truck Series career debut at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Coming from Mexico City, Mexico, he'll attempt to qualify for the North Carolina Education Lottery 200 for his Camping World Truck Series career debut. Now, if Gutierrez makes the event, he'll become the 66th different driver to driver all time in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series, with their home country recorded as outside of the United States of America. He would also become the 9th different driver from Mexico to compete in the series. He would join Daniel Suarez, who comes from Monterrey, Carlos Contreras, Mexico City, as well as Germain Cuerga and Michael Jourdain. I remember him coming out of Mexico City. Enrique Contreras III, as well as Jose Luis Ramirez, all of those, as well as Ruben Pardo and Juan Ma Gonzalez coming out of Mexico City. All right, Sharon, if you're ready, you can take the four different winners there at Charlotte.
Okay, I am back, at least momentarily. There are four different winners in the last four races at Charlotte, and the door to victory lane at Charlotte Motor Speedway in the Camping World Truck Series has been a rotating one with those four different winners in the last four races. Johnny Sauter was the winner in 2018. It was Kyle Busch in 2019, Chase Elliott in 2020, and John Hunter Nemechek last year. Both Busch and Nemechek are entered this weekend, so they're going to attempt to snap the different winner streak. Nemechek is the defending winner, having won just last year, and Busch leads the series in wins with 8. His last victory, as we mentioned earlier, was in 2019.
Well, we talked about Max Gutierrez wanting a top 5. There's 2 spots you're going to have to really fight for in the top 5, I think, with John Hunter Nemechek and Kyle Busch. And so we'll see how that all plays out. Now, we're still going to talk about Kyle Busch Motorsports as Heim tightens up the Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings considerably. And driving for Kyle Busch Motorsports, Heim might be on a part-time this season, and he is not participating this weekend, but with time, the time he has spent behind the wheel, he has definitely made the most of it as he closed in the points lead down to 2 points in these rookie standings between himself and standings leader Lawless Allen. In last weekend's race at Texas, Heim finished seventh, which was his second top 10 of the season. As mentioned, Heim is now second in the Sunoco Rookie of the Year standings, moving up 2 spots from fourth of the previous week. The Lawless Allen still holds that rookie standings lead and will look to build on it this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Of the 5 rookies, Heim has not entered this weekend, and Jack Wood is the only one that has made a previous start at Charlotte. The other 3, being Allen, Dean Thompson, and then Blaine Perkins, they'll be making their series track debuts this weekend. Wood has made his track debut at Charlotte last season. He started 20th and finished 15th.
Okay, next up we have 7 races to go, which is 5 spots left as the playoffs are looming for several drivers. There is a sense of urgency that has begun to drape itself over the Camping World Truck Series championship competitors. And that's especially for those that have not locked themselves into the playoffs as the series prepares for the 10th event of the season. Now, the North Carolina Education Lottery is this Friday, and Stuart Friesen last week became the 5th different driver vying for the title this season to win his way into the playoffs. He took the checkered flag in a dramatic overtime finish at Texas Motor Speedway last Friday, and he joined Zane Smith, who has 3 wins this season. Chandler Smith, John Hunter Nemechek, and Ben Rhodes all have 1 win apiece. Now, holding on to the final Camping World Truck Series playoff transfer spot in 10th is Thorthor Sport Racing's Matt Crafton. He's up a hefty 35 points over the 11th place driver Tanner Gray after Texas. Now, Crafton right now is riding a streak of 6 straight playoff appearances in the series. That's the most all time. And now he's looking to keep that streak alive this year. Though Crafton hasn't been to victory lane in 44 races, his last win came at Kansas Speedway in 2020. Charlotte, however, is one of his better tracks, and that could be the place he rights his ship. Crafton has made 19 starts at Charlotte, posting 2 wins in 2008 and 16. He has 7 top 5s there, along with 13 top 10s. The drivers outside the playoff cut line definitely will have their work cut out for them if they want to point their way into the postseason with just these 7 races left in the regular season. Is it 7 or 10? Oh, it's the 10th race. Okay. Team DGR's Tanner Gray is the closest to the playoff cut line. He's 11th in the standings, just 35 points behind Crafton, who sits in 10th. Gray is having one of his best seasons of his career, already having 2 top 5 finishes along with 3 top 10s in 9 starts. Gray has made 2 series starts at Charlotte, putting up an average finish, though, of 21.0. McAnally Hilgerman Racing's Derek Krause is 12th in the driver's standings. He's 57 points back from Krause, has had an up-and-down season this year. In 9 starts, he's put up 2 top 10s. He's hoping this weekend to run well at Charlotte. In his 2 starts there, he's managed an average finish of 12.0, including an 8th-place finish in this race just last season. After back-to-back top 10 finishes in the last 2 weeks, Rackley War's Matt DiBenedetto is finally starting to gel with his new team, and all the arduous work is starting to show up in his box score. In 9 starts this season, DiBenedetto is 13th in points. He does have 67 markers between him and Crafting, who sits in 10th. He's put up 4 top 10s on the season, and this week he is seeking his first career playoff berth in the series. He was making his draft debut at Charlotte Motor Speedway in the truck series, so we'll have to see what he's able to do. Hattori Racing Enterprises has Tyler Ankrum. He's sitting in 14th in the driver standings after Texas. He's just 1 point back from DiBenedetto in 13th and 68 points back of Crafton in 10th. Now, this season, Ankrum's put up 3 top 10 finishes and 9 starts, and he's looking to make the playoffs for the 3rd time in his career. He did it in 2019 and also in 2020. Ankrum has 3 starts at Charlotte. He posted his posting an average finish of 18.7. The remaining 3 drivers still eligible to earn a spot in the playoffs include Timmy Hill, who's 106 points back, Austin Wayne South at 116 back, and Colby Howard at 127 points back. All are more than 100 points outside the postseason cut line, though mathematically possible to point their way in. Excuse me. A win would be much easier to get to the playoffs, however. At Charlotte this weekend, Colby Howard will attempt to make his series draft debut. Self has a 19.5 average finish. It's a little bit better than Hill's at 23.0 at Charlotte Motor Speedway, a 1.5-mile track. So that cutoff line is pretty heavy, with drivers all wanting to get a win rather than point their way in.
Well, and you talked about getting a win, an easier way to go about it to lock yourself in. And it became a fabulous 5 there as Friesen became the 5th championship contender to win this season. Helmar Friesen Racing's Stuart Friesen snagged the win in overtime last weekend at Texas Motor Speedway to become that 5th different championship contender to lock themselves into the postseason by virtue of the victory this year. Now, with the Camping World Truck Series headed to Charlotte Motor Speedway this weekend for the North Carolina Education Lottery 200, who will be the next driver that could add their name to that list, the winner's list? We have a total of 10 different Camping World Truck Series drivers that have won at Charlotte Motor Speedway. It's led by Kyle Busch with 8 victories. And this weekend, we have 3 active Camping World Truck Series Charlotte Motor Speedway winners entered into the North Carolina Education Lottery 200. Mentioned Kyle Busch with the 8 wins at 05, 6, 10, and 11, 13, 14. Ooh, looked like back-to-back years there for a while, 17 and 19. Matt Crafton also has a pair with the 2008 and 16. And then John Hunter Nemechek with 1 victory, and that coming last year in 2021. Now, of those 10 different drivers, 3 of them scored their first Camping World Truck Series career victory at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and that includes Kyle Busch, which was in 05, Matt Crafton in 2008, and a flashback of Justin Lofton in 2012. Now, 4 of the 5 winless drivers this season inside the top 10 in the driver standings after Texas are looking for their first series career win at Charlotte on the weekend, Matt Crafton being the only exception. Ty Majeski is up 85 points. Christian Eckes, 73 to the good. My pick, Carson Hocevar at plus 59. Grant Infinger at plus 37 have all built sizable leads over that playoff cut line Sharon was talking about, but have yet to win on the season or at Charlotte. Of the 4, Hocevar at a 2.0 has the best average finish at the 1.5-mile track, but he's making his series track debut at Charlotte last season, finishing runner-up to John Hunter Nemechek. And that was followed by Majeski at 7.5, Enfinger at 10.5, and Christian Eckes at 12.5.
Okay, Jay, I am back. I'm not sure how well this is going to go. So you may have to pick up for me.
Okay.
If you guys keep going again. Okay. Let's see. Up next is Charlotte Motor Speedway, the 10th race of this season. They're cranking up the lights for Friday night's Camping World Truck Series race this week. And again, the season kicks off the Memorial Day weekend celebration at Charlotte that is set to pay tribute to those who serve and honor those who have made the ultimate sacrifice to our country. That's what Memorial Day is all about. With this sixth straight top 10 finish of the season last weekend at Texas, John Hunter Nemechek now has leapfrogged over Thor Sport Racing Ben Rhodes in the championship driver standing to take the lead for the Truck Series points. Nemechek is up by 4 points over Rhodes heading in Charlotte this weekend and is the fourth different driver to hold a points lead this season. Charlotte will be the fourth different 1.5-mile track that the series has visited this season, along with Las Vegas, Atlanta, and Kansas. Charlotte Motor Speedway has hosted the Camping World Truck Series 19 times, dating back to the inaugural event on May 16th of 2003. The first Truck Series event at Charlotte was won by Ted Musgrave. He drove a Dodge for Truck Series owner Jim Smith. In total, 19 previous Truck Series races at Charlotte have produced 10 different pole winners and 10 different race winners, including Kyle Busch Motorsports owner driver Kyle Busch, who won in 2008, 2010, and 2014. He's tied with Mike Skinner, who did it in 2005, 2006, and 2007, for the series most poles at Charlotte with 3 each. So those guys all have the lead when it comes to poles. KBM's Kyle Busch also leads the series in wins, however. He has 8 victories in 2005, 6, 10, 11, 13, 14, 17, and 19. In fact, Kyle Busch Motorsports has won an impressive 7 of the last 12 races between 2010 and 2021. The winning percentage for that organization is at 58.3%, including John Hunter Nemechek's win just last season. Now, this weekend, all the on-track activities will start. It brings the Camping World Truck Series practice from 1:30 to 2 o'clock Eastern Time, directly followed by the Kinetic Gaskets pole qualifying at 2 p.m. Eastern, and both of those events will be televised on Fox Sports 1. So the Camping World Truck Series has another big race coming up this week at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Wow, and I was excited there talking about a Dodge truck. I forgot team owner Jim Smith. I thought that was with Keselowski.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that was pretty cool to hear. Okay, now the Xfinity Series is also racing this weekend in the Alstow Uniforms 300. That race was to be Saturday, May the 28th, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and it will be televised with pre-race coverage on Fox Sports 1 starting at 12 p.m. Eastern. PRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio will have the radio coverage. They'll race a distance of 300 miles over 200 laps. Stage 1 ends on lap 45. Stage 2, also 45 laps, ends on lap 90. And then the final stage ends on the last lap, lap 200, for 110 laps. So what do we have here for the Xfinity Series, Jeff?
Well, we're going to jump ahead a little bit as we got Mason Filippi to attempt his Xfinity Series debut, but that'll be at Portland International Raceway. He's an IMSA Pilot Challenge driver, Mason Filippi, with the support of Open Fender. He'll attempt his NASCAR Xfinity Series debut in the number 91 DGM Racing Chevrolet coming up at Portland International Raceway next weekend. Felipe is a California native, quickly climbed the ranks of the SRO and IMSA, has experience at Portland International Raceway, including a win and a third-place finish. So he's thrilled to be in that car for DGM Racing and looking forward to the new challenge at Portland.
Okay. Well, I'm sure fans are looking forward to watching him as well. Now, Junior Motorsports continues to rack up points, however. They've really been on a roll this season with four of the 12 races having been won by a JRM driver. Noah Gregson won at Phoenix and Talladega, Josh Berry at Dover, and Justin Allgaier at Darlington. Now they've set a record for the most consecutive stage wins at eight in the Xfinity Series after winning every stage from Talladega to last weekend's race at Texas. Joe Gibbs Racing previously held the record for snagging seven consecutive stage wins, and that was in 2019.
Well, another one we got to hit on again here is we got Nick Sanchez returning to the Xfinity Series lineup at Charlotte. The NASCAR Drive for Diversity program, a developmental program designed to provide training and opportunities for women and minorities in the driver's seat and on pit crews within the NASCAR industry. And fans will get to see one of these drivers in Nick Sanchez as he makes his second start in the Xfinity Series this weekend in the ALSCO Uniforms 300. Maybe that's why I got confused with whose audio we were playing. I knew they were both on the list. Sanchez made his series debut earlier this season at Phoenix Raceway, placing 26th in the number 5 BJ McLeod Motorsports Chevrolet. He'll once again join BJMM this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway, as well as later this season at Pocono Raceway, Michigan International Speedway, Kansas Motor Speedway, Bristol Motor Speedway, and then Homestead Miami Speedway. Speaking of Miami, he is a Miami, Florida native, currently driving the number 2 Rev Racing Chevrolet full-time in the ARCA Menard Series, where he stands third in the point standing, just 4 points shy of the leader. I don't think that got updated because he's tied with a teammate. But in 26 ARCA Menard Series starts, he has posted 3 wins, 11 top fives, and 8. He took on full-bodied stock cars after winning the Wendell Scott Trailblazer Award in 2019 as the most outstanding minority driver at NASCAR's weekly level, and that was in a late model.
Okay, now there are some Xfinity Series drivers to watch this weekend at Charlotte. 3 drivers that have been running very well in the recent past at Charlotte Motor Speedway include Daniel Hamrick, Justin Allgaier, and Riley Earps might be the ones to watch this weekend. Aside from Hamrick's crash last season that gave him a 26th place finish at Charlotte, he's done pretty well at the 1.5 North Carolina track. In his 4 other starts there, he posted 2 top 10s and a runner-up finish. Hamrick has also done well at other 1.5-mile tracks, such as Las Vegas and Texas. At Las Vegas, he posted 4 top 5s and 4 top 10s in 8 starts, and most recently, he placed 3rd. As for Texas, he's coming off that 11th place finish just last weekend, and he's posted 3 top 5s and 4 top 10s since the 2018 season. Now, last year, the Xfinity Series champion is looking for his first win of the season, and Charlotte Motor Speedway could be the place that he makes that happen. There's also veteran Justin Allgaier. He's had a hot start to his 2022 season with 1 win, 5 top 5s and 7 top 10s, and the same could be said about his history at Charlotte Motor Speedway. In 19 starts, he's posted 5 top 5s, 10 top 10s, and now he's just looking to add a win to his Charlotte stats. He came close in 19 after posting a 2nd place finish, and considering his performance the last 2 weeks at Darlington, 1.366-mile track, in Texas, the 1.5-mile track, it appears Allgaier is now ready for his 2nd trip to victory lane this season. Now, another driver To keep an eye on this weekend is Stuart Haas Racing's Riley Herbst. Although he's yet to post an Xfinity Series win, he's done pretty well this season with 4 top fives and 9 top tens in 12 starts. He's only given Charlotte Motor Speedway a go twice, but he's already won a pole. That was in 2021, and he's finished 12th in both races. As for other 1.5-mile tracks on the schedule this season, he's proven to know how to get near the front of the pack. He posted a 12th-place finish at Las Vegas, a 4th-place finish at Atlanta, and an 8th-place finish at Texas just last weekend. In total this season, he's put up 4 top fives and 9 top tens. So 3 drivers to keep your eyes on this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
And it is a big Memorial Day weekend there at Charlotte Motor Speedway, we've talked about, as the majority of the NASCAR Xfinity Series drivers entered into this weekend won't have to travel too far for that All-Skull Uniforms 300 taking place right there at Charlotte Motor Speedway on Saturday the 28th. And it's marking the halfway point of the 2022 regular season. And we last saw Joe Gibbs Racing's Ty Gibbs jumped to the lead in the last 20 laps of the 200-lap Charlotte Motor Speedway Xfinity Series race to snag his second Xfinity Series career win after what seemed like a promising run for his then JGR teammate Daniel Hemric. Now, Hemric had led 105 laps before falling victim to an incident on lap 186 last year. Gibbs will be back to compete in the NASCAR Xfinity Series Charlotte Motor Speedway race this weekend as he's looking to become the 6th different driver to win consecutive Xfinity Series races at Charlotte Motor Speedway. That would put him on a list joining Rob Moroso in 1988 and 89 sweep. Jeff Gordon did it in the 1992 with a sweep. Mark Martin, a 95 and 96 sweep. Kyle Busch, a 2008 sweep, 2009, 2010, and then a 2013 sweep, as well as Austin Dillon, who had the 2015 sweep. The Charlotte Motor Speedway has hosted a total of 76 NASCAR Xfinity Series races, dating back to the inaugural event back on May 29, 1982. That first NASCAR Xfinity Series race at Charlotte was won by Handsome Harry, Harry Gant. Since then, there's been 49 different race winners, with 37 different race winners. I'm assuming that's the poll. 49 different Xfinity Series race winners, and I'm guessing that's supposed to say 37 different poll winners, with Gibbs currently sitting as the youngest winner, as he won last year's race at 18 years, 7 months, and 25 years old. As with many tracks, we got to talk about the veteran Kyle Busch as he's etched his name in the Charlotte Motor Speedway record books with that most wins of 9, most top fives and 19, most top tens is at 22, and then most lead lap finishes also at 22, and most laps led at 1,475 here in the Xfinity Series. Others that have made a name for themselves at the track, they include Carl Edwards and Matt Kenseth, as they are both tied for the most poles at 4. And then Kenny Wallace with the most laps completed at 6,281, done in 35 races. The on-track action for the Xfinity Series, again, will set to start Friday, May 27th. They'll have a practice session at 3:30 p.m. Eastern time, followed right up at 4 p.m. Eastern time. And you can check that all out on FS1.
All right. Now, we'll go ahead and get into the Cup Series. They usually have a little bit more, so that extra time that we have here will probably be used up. They will be racing the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway this Sunday, May the 29th at 6 p.m. Eastern. The coverage will actually be on Fox. Starting at 5 p.m. Eastern, radio coverage on TRN and SiriusXM NASCAR Radio. They'll be racing a distance, the biggest race of the season, 600 miles over 400 laps. Stage 1 ends on lap 100, stage 2 on lap 200 for another 100 laps, and then stage 3 ends on lap 300, and the final stage, again, ends on lap 400. So 100 laps for each of those stages for the biggest race of the season for the NASCAR Cup Series at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Well, we'll take a look at some news and notes on the bottom section here. We got a triple header weekend, not just for the Cup Series top three series, but for Ryan Preece himself. He's a Connecticut native. Ryan Preece has a full plate of racing this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway as the 31-year-old will be pulling that triple duty, competing in all three of NASCAR's National Series races. On Friday night in the North Carolina Education Lottery 200, Preece will be in the number 17 at Team DGR Ford for his fifth start in the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series this season. In his four previous starts this year, he's posted two top fives and four top tens. Then on Saturday in the ALSCO Uniforms 300, Preece will be jumping into the number 5 BJ McLeod Motorsports Ford for his second NASCAR Xfinity Series start of the year. In this series, his season debut in the number 5 was at Richmond, where he posted a 16th place finish. Then Sunday, he's going to keep at it. Preece will pilot the number 15 Rick Ware Racing Ford, his second start of the season on the Cup side, made his series season debut at Dover a few weeks back, putting up a 25th place finish.
Okay, another thing to watch for this weekend, the Carolina Panthers wide receiver DJ Moore has been named the honorary pace car driver. So he will lead the field to green as the honorary pace car driver for the 63rd running of the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Moore is joining an all-star cast of current and former Panthers to serve in dignitary roles at America's Home for Racing. He joins Christian McCaffrey, Greg Olson, Thomas Davis, who have all helped bring NASCAR's crown jewel event to life through the years from behind the wheel of the Toyota Camry TRD pace car. So, again, a Carolina Panther driving that pace car at Charlotte this weekend.
Well, before we get to the pace laps, we got the pre-race. And we got Leonard Skinner is going to play the Coca-Cola 600 pre-race concert at Charlotte Motor Speedway. The iconic rock band Leonard Skinner will salute America with the ultimate Memorial Day weekend concert ahead of that 63rd running of the Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. The 2006 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees will perform a bevy of their Southern rock anthems for the Coca-Cola 600 ticket holders during an hour-long pre-race concert right there on Pitt Road. Now, fans who upgrade their race tickets to a track access pass will have stage front access for that performance. So if you're a Leonard Skinner fan, you get to be up close and personal.
Okay, well, last weekend at Texas, Ryan Blaney won the All-Star race. So he's looking to become the ninth driver to win the All-Star and the Coke 600 in the same season. Team Penske's Ryan Blaney won last week at Texas Motor Speedway, and this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway, he's attempting to become that ninth different driver to win both races in the same season. If he does so, he would join driver Kyle Larson, who did it in 2021, Kurt Busch, who did it in 2010, Casey Kane in 08, Jimmy Johnson in 03, Jeff Gordon 1997, Dale Earnhardt did it in 1993, Davey Allison in 91, and Darrell Waltrip in 1985. So that goes back quite a ways as far as NASCAR history.
Certainly is. Always amazing when you put your name on that kind of list. Another list we're going to look at is Charlotte Motor Speedway. It's a great place for first-time winners. When it comes to getting your first win in the NASCAR Cup Series, nowhere beats Daytona International Speedway with 22 first-time winners. But when it comes to 1.5-mile tracks, none have produced more first-time winners than Charlotte Motor Speedway with 10, which is the fourth most all-time behind Daytona at 22, Talladega at 13, and then a short track of Martinsville with 12. And the most recent driver to win his first career NASCAR Cup Series race at Charlotte Motor Speedway, that would be Richard Childress Racing's Austin Dillon, collected his first checkered flag back in 2017. Looking at the list prior to that is David Rudiman on May 25th, 2009. Casey Mears did it on May 27th of 07. Jamie McMurray, I remember that one, October 13th, 2002. Matt Kenseth, May 28th of 2000. Yeah, I remember several of these, actually. Bobby Labonte back in May 28th of 95. Jeff Gordon in 94, May 29th, 1994. And you got a little bit of a gap. It goes back to Charlie Glotzbach in October of 1968, October 20th, 1968. Buddy Baker, October 15th, 1967. And then David Pearson on May 28th of 1961. Now, the 2022 season has already seen three first-time winners. We got Austin Cindric, who picked up the Daytona 500 victory. Chase Briscoe did it at Phoenix. And Ross Chastain, first one came at COTA, and he followed it up at Talladega. In the modern era, 1972 to the present, most first-time winners in the NASCAR Cup Series has seen in a single season is five. That happened in 2001 and 2011. So we got two more to go to tie that record.
How about it? I think it could happen. Now, two drivers to keep your eye on this weekend include Kevin Harvick and Martin Truex, because they're still winless so far this season. But they lead the series in victories at Charlotte Motor Speedway. So are Stewart Haas Racing's Kevin Harvick and Joe Gibbs Racing's Martin Truex Jr. lead all of the Cup Series drivers, all active Cup Series drivers in wins at the track. And they head into this weekend winless on the season, but they're hoping to visit Victory Lane and in that streak. Harvick is currently riding the second longest winning streak of his career at 56 races without a win. His longest streak of races in the Cup Series without a win was 115 races from 2007 to 2010. Before that, his current winless streak that he's on, he won 11 straight seasons, 2010 to 2020, with at least one win. Now, Harvick last won at Bristol Motor Speedway in September of 2020. So it's been a while. Harvick and the number four SHR team have struggled on the 1.5-mile tracks this season, finishing 12th at Las Vegas. They finished 21st at Atlanta, 15th at Kansas. His best finish this season was a runner-up finish at Richmond Raceway. And in 13 starts, he's put up two top fives and six top tens. At Charlotte, Harvick has made 39 starts, posting three wins in 2011, 13, and 14. He has nine top fives and 20 top tens, including finishing top 10 in his last four starts at the track. Joe Gibbs Racing's Martin Truex Jr. is tied with Harvick for the most wins at Charlotte among active drivers. He has three victories there in 2016, 17, and 19. Truex has completed 21 races since his last win in the Cup Series. That was at Richmond Raceway on September 11th of 2020. This year, Truex has collected two top fives, six top tens, and his best finish this season is a fourth-place finish at Richmond. Though Truex has had the speed at 1.5-mile tracks this season, he's finished eighth at Las Vegas and Atlanta. He finished sixth at Kansas. However, at Charlotte, Truex has made 30 series starts, posting three wins, seven top fives, and 13 top tens. Which one of those two will be the first to snap that winning streak?
Well, I know you're behind Truex. You pick, yeah, you picked Truex again this week, so I know you're behind him.
Okay.
Now, with a win this weekend, Denny Hamlin could join some elite club. Three major pillars within the NASCAR Cup Series schedule. Some even refer to them as the crown jewel events of the series, the Daytona 500, the Southern 500, and this weekend's Coca-Cola 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway are all extremely difficult to win by themselves, and even more so is conquering all three. In NASCAR Cup Series history, only 11 drivers have won all three major events, and with the win this weekend, Joe Gibbs Racing's Denny Hamlin could be that 12th. A NASCAR Hall of Famer leads the series in crown jewel wins with a combined 12 victories across the three events. Three
That's
Daytona
Jeff
500
Gordon.
Wins. Oh, I'm sorry.
You just said Hall of Famer.
NASCAR Hall of Famer Jeff Gordon leads the series in crown jewel event wins with a combined 12 victories across the three events. Three of them being Daytona 500 wins, coming in 97, 99, and 2005. Six Southern 500s, 95, 6, 7, 8, 2002, and 2007. And three in the Coca-Cola 600, coming in 1994, 97, and 98. Another one, Stewart Haas Racing's Kevin Harvick. He's currently the only active driver to already have accomplished the feat with five combined victories across the three historic events. He's got one Daytona 500 victory in 2007, two Southern 500s coming in 2014 and 2020, and then two Coca-Cola 600 in 2011 and 13. Some other drivers in between there, we got Richard Petty. He's obviously got seven Daytona 500 victories, only one Southern 500, but then two Coca-Cola 600s for a combined 10 wins. Bobby Allison also has 10, three in the Daytona 500, four in the Southern 500, and three in the Coca-Cola 600. Jimmy Johnson came in fourth on the list with eight, having two Daytona 500 wins, two Southern 500 wins, but he had four Coca-Cola 600 victories. Several drivers at seven total. Dale Earnhardt, one Daytona win, three Southern 500 wins, and three Coca-Cola wins. Darrell Waltrip had one 500 win, one Southern 500 win. He had five Coca-Cola 600 wins. Dale Pearson, the other one, was seven. His was one Daytona win, three Southern wins, and three Coca-Cola 600 wins. Eighth on the list, Buddy Baker has five, as well as Kevin Harvick. Baker's stat line is one 500 victory, one Southern 500 win, and three Coca-Cola 600 wins. Harvick's the one Daytona, two Southern, and two Coca-Cola. Matt Kenseth, the other one, he has two Daytona 500 victories, one Southern 500, and one Coca-Cola 600 for a total of four. And then Leroy Yarbrough, had one at each, one Daytona 500, one Southern 500, one Coca-Cola 600, the 11th driver, and he had three. And Denny Hamlin is one of 11 active drivers that have already won at least one of the three events of those three, the Daytona 500, Southern 500, or Coca-Cola 600, and leads all active drivers in combined wins with the six victories. Again, his is three Daytona 500s, from 2016, 2019, and 2020, and then three Southern 500s from 2010, 2017, and this year's 2021 session. I'm sorry, last year's.
Okay. Next up we have NASCAR salutes the military and their families in the Coca-Cola 600. NASCAR salutes together with Coca-Cola returns for its eighth season, celebrating the service and sacrifice of U.S. service members and their families. Tributes this season began at Dover Motor Speedway on May 2nd and will conclude with the 600 miles of remembrance during the Coca-Cola Daytona 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway on Memorial Day weekend. Fans can follow and engage on social media using the hashtag NASCAR Salutes. Unique to the program this year, however, NASCAR Salutes Wall of Honor will make its debut at each NASCAR race weekend in May. The mural wall is located in track midways and allows fans to write messages to the military on individual magnets. Each magnet will then be added to the mural to create a gigantic mosaic unique to each track that will later be donated to a military base. To conclude, NASCAR Salutes together with Coca-Cola. NASCAR and Coca-Cola will again host Gold Star families during the Memorial Day weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway, with all 40 NASCAR Cup Series cars featuring the name of a fallen service member on their windshield during the Coca-Cola 600. In addition to several other NASCAR Salute activities that will be taking place, including at each NASCAR event throughout the month of May, service members from local bases will have access to complimentary grandstand tickets and a unique VIP experience made possible by Vet Tips and the NASCAR Troops to the Track program. Also, Charlotte Motor Speedway continues its annual Mission 600, pairing the Coca-Cola racing family and other drivers with military bases to educate the NASCAR community about the day-to-day lives of men and women who are serving or have served. Xfinity, a proud premier partner, is also displaying red, white, and blue Xfinity windshield headers on the race cars during the Xfinity Series ASCO Uniforms 300 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. That's to showcase their company's commitment to hiring 21,000 veterans, National Guard, and Reserve Service members and military spouses who bring unique skills and experiences to Comcast NBC Universal. Also, the Camping World will celebrate with red, white, and blue windshield decals on all trucks racing in the North Carolina Education Lottery 200 at Charlotte. Camping World, of course, is a very strong supporter of the military branches and proudly displays 3,200 square foot of American flags at its nationwide retail locations. AMR, the official emergency medical services partner of NASCAR, will also feature the NASCAR Salutes together with Coca-Cola branding on its NASCAR safety trucks and safety team helmets throughout the program. For this season, Mack Trucks, the official hauler of NASCAR, will wrap one of its NASCAR haulers in support of NASCAR Salutes leading into the Memorial Day weekend. The final design was selected by fan votes, with the voting period closing this week. Continuing its tradition, Goodyear will also replace its iconic Eagle sidewall design with Honor and Remember during the Coke 600 in recognition of the organization working closely with the industry to honor Gold Star families who have lost family members as a result of serving. During the broadcast of the Coca-Cola 600, Fox will display the name of every U.S. Armed Forces member who has lost his or her life since last year's Memorial Day weekend race as a part of a special tribute titled Fox Sports Remembers, an initiative that was begun in 2009. Fox's scroll will begin running during its pre-race show at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. So a lot going on this weekend with the NASCAR Salutes program. We are.
And I
got to
say, NASCAR always.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, NASCAR always does a great job with their Memorial Day weekend festivities and what they do to honor the troops. So big shout out to them for that.
Yes, indeed. Okay, we are at the top of the hour. That means it's time for a NASCAR Hot Topic sound-off. And, Jay, I believe it's just going to be you and I. Andy wasn't available. Mike is working. working, and unfortunately Tommy wasn't available. And I know that Chris has work that he does on Thursday nights, so he's not available.
Okay, I hadn't heard. I didn't know if you had heard back from Tommy. I know he normally likes to jump in here when he can. I know Mike and Mike and Andy stay pretty busy there. Unfortunately, couldn't be on tonight.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so which topic do you want to get started with, Jake?
Well, I'll set that soapbox up for you here. Let me find it.
Oh my.
might as well get that one out of the way right off the get-go, right?
Yeah, I saw that this morning, and I felt compelled.
Let's see. Where is it now? Bump. Is that under it? Oh, here we go. Okay, so let me get the original post pulled up. Denny Hamlin. Okay, I think you got your fair warning post there actually under.
Yeah, I think I put it under the wrong thing, didn't I? Or was there something else?
Yeah, okay. So let me find the one of Denny Hamlin.
Oh,
is the one I'm looking
at. I was responding to the article, yeah.
Okay, wait, say that again, Sharon.
I guess I was responding to the article that you posted under that same hot topic.
Okay, did I do that? Did I put the, you're right, I started it under the wrong one. Okay, so the topic is Denny Hamlin issuing an ultimatum to NASCAR, change or we won't expand. And it was an article coming up on, let me see where it's from.
EssentiallySports.com.
Okay. Essentially Sports, and it looks like Drew George. Essentially what it is saying, and he's quoted as Denny Hamlin recently spoke to NASCAR CEO Jim Krantz and demanded a change in the way things are run. And Hamlin has confirmed that his 2311 racing team plans to expand in the future, but would go on record saying that after meeting with Jim Krantz, my message was clear that we need to stop talking about cutting. Cutting does not equal growth. If we start working collectively, then we can grow this sport together. But the business model will have to change for that to happen. We at 2311 have big plans, but those plans are on hold until we see change. So that's apparently what he brought to Jim Krantz. And Sharon, I'll go ahead and let you start here. I know you got... I don't know how long it took me to read all that this morning.
Well, here's the thing. It goes on to say that without a doubt, Kurt Busch's win would have galvanized the team. As a result, there are plans in development to buy more charters or develop a new headquarters. Unfortunately, unless NASCAR decides to cede to their demands, those designs will be on ice for the time being. The main issue is figuring out how to earn more TV money with the next media rights deal. And I think that's what set me off. According to reports, the new deal is expected to land by 2025. Additionally, the organization wants a clearer picture of how much to spend on operating the next-gen cars. For now, though, he and 2311 Racing have to focus on the ongoing NASCAR Cup Series season. At the moment, Hamlin is in the playoffs, as is Busch from his win at Kansas Speedway, but they're still looking to get Bubba Wallace to victory lane. So the TV rights deal, I think, is part of what I was responding to here. Again, I think it's rather vague. They're saying that they're making the a series of demands without really telling us what those demands are, and that they're putting all of their plans, which they, again, don't say what those plans are, on hold, until NASCAR meets their demands. I don't know. I'm a little frustrated with Denny Hamlin right now, to say the least. It's become a weekly thing that we hear from him every single week. He's got a complaint about NASCAR.
Get your bone.
So, yeah, can you hear me?
Sorry, I thought I was on mute. I was taking care of my, I thought I was on mute. I was taking care of my dog. Sorry about that.
Oh, okay. So I did get on my soapbox this morning, and I just said, this is one of those articles that stir the pot without giving any specific details. And I've already outlined where I thought those details were missing. I understand the issue that he has with the TV deal and that he wants NASCAR to share profits with the teams. But there has to be more to that for him to take up the time of Jim France. One, NASCAR already has been very supportive of teams that have come to them and said that they have a need. They do it in various ways, might be helping them to secure sponsorship. It might be helping them to get tires that they need. But NASCAR gets actively involved in helping teams when they need that help. They may not give the help directly, but they help them look for people that can help them directly. Marcus Lemonis is another one in the Camping World Truck Series that has made an open offer to teams that are looking for support. He just wants his name on their trucks, and he's done that several times with many teams in the Camping World Truck Series. Hamlin, however, wants the support more equally shared across the board. In my opinion, the bigger teams don't necessarily need more money, so that doesn't really make good business sense for NASCAR, especially when you consider the efforts that they put into creating parity amongst the teams in order to get more competition. So to me, that sounds counterproductive, what Denny Hamlin is asking them to do. NASCAR's already taken steps to create that parity, and if they want to equally distribute the TV rights deal among all the teams, that just is counterproductive, in my opinion. I don't think, if it was your team, I don't think anybody would do that individually. Not only that, but NASCAR needs that separation of roles, in my opinion, again, between the sanctioning body and the teams and the players. You don't have the teams and the players become part of the sanctioning body. It just isn't a good model. And so that's what he's asking them to do, I think that's not a model that's really going to work well for NASCAR. Two, and I brought this up earlier, it's really challenging to support Hamlin right now because he's fallen into that every week complaint about NASCAR. I think what he's done is he's created a face that he's bringing to the table that doesn't support the industry as a whole, but he's asking that industry to support him. So NASCAR's not going to support that kind of behavior. I think what he's trying to do is to bring a Jordan-esque type leadership style, but his approach is really off the mark of what Jordan did. Jordan was the kind of guy that had a way of making the teams that he played for better, and he did have an in-your-face style that he did with his peers, but he didn't do it out in public. He also had a buddy style that he would sit down with them individually, have a face-to-face conversation, and really challenge them on how much they wanted to be a great team. And he was successful at that. Jordan did on occasion call out the management of the Bulls organization and other organizations that he worked with, but it wasn't an issue that he put up every week in a public format. So I just think that having studied what pressure does as far as developing productivity within an organization, a little pressure does wonders. Sometimes you can put pressure on people and it helps them perform better. But what Jordan is doing, or what Hamlin is doing, is he's bringing it to the table every single week. And I think what he's done is he's taken that pressure to a point of not getting results. Because when you do that every single week, it starts to sound like the Charlie Brown parental characters that go, wah, wah, wah. You don't really hear it anymore. Hamlin might have some good ideas, but those are getting lost in the noise that he's making every single week. So I really think he needs to take a step back. If you look at Hamlin's career, and I've watched this over the years, and personally, I think that Hamlin lacks an emotional intelligence that would really help him if he took the time to work on his emotional intelligence. He doesn't. And I think the really sad thing about all of this is that Hamlin doesn't get that he doesn't get it, and he doesn't want to hear it. I think he has to stop that cycle if he really wants people to take note of what he has to say. And he hasn't. He's got a whiny way of going about it, and it's not effective. It's not working, in my opinion. I don't think it's working, especially when you stack it up against teams like what Trackhouse Racing is doing. Now, they're making change, and they're not putting they're not asking somebody else to make the change. They're making the change happen within their organization, and that's an effective way to do it. And I don't see what Hamlin's doing as being an effective way to be a change agent within NASCAR. I think it's a very ineffective way. It's becoming annoying, and I just don't see him making any headway with it. That's my soapbox. I'll let you take a turn.
As I said, no, do you need to do your spiel yet on time? No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God. Did I go that long?
You know, as a whole, there's a lot of things there that I agree with you on. I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit on a couple points, though. First off, the article. Now, you said it's vague and doesn't give any specifics. They may not have that. I know even Denny Hamlin's quotes, like you said, wasn't real clear on what it was even that they were demanding. So, you know, give some credit there. I don't know that their intent was necessarily to stir the pot with some open, vague information, because they might not have had that information. They just published what they had. Second, then, you know, I agree with what Denny Hamlin, he said, hey, I spoke to Jim France. I think some changes need to be made. He is in a position to be able to do that. We've talked about this. Over the years, NASCAR has done a tremendous job of working with team owners, sponsors, the TV rights and the broadcast. Overall, that has been greatly improved from, and I'm not going to try and badmouth it. I think it was time for an evolution change, but you think back to Big Brian France, you know, my way or the highway, I don't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have that anymore. Okay, now I think Denny Hamlin's trying to go overboard with it. You know, they're not going to answer every whine and cry that a driver makes, like you said. And we all kind of agreed on that, you know, and man, I wish, I know on Sirius XM radio, they got the sound drops, the Charlie Brown's teacher, wah, 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 wah. You're right. It's just becoming tuned out because it's happening each and every week about something. As I was reading through your stuff this morning and thinking about it, first off, though, to make the demands of we're not going to expand, Junior Motorsports, Dale Jr. kind of said that too. We're not going to move up to the cup level because the price of the charters is too high and this and that. I think back, though, when it comes down to it, the sport of NASCAR is bigger than one person. And I go back to the France when Talladega was built and the teams wouldn't drive on it. They said, we're not going to race. They went out and they found drivers and they had that race. We've seen drivers such as recently Jimmy Johnson, Tony Stewart, Jeff Gordon. Think of the legends, Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt in passing. Yes, they had an impact on the sport. Yes, they were important to the sport, but the sport moves on and continued. Okay, think about Michael Jordan in basketball. Very important and carried the league for his time period. But when that time period is gone or retirement or whatever the case is, the sport itself is still going to move on. So to carry that kind of thread of we're not going to expand or we're not going to race, yeah, you're just making yourself, I agree, look bad. So there, I think there is a better way to go about it. Pick through what valid points he has and what he's talking about and how they can be accomplished, but that should be done behind closed doors. I think about Rick Hendrick, Hendrick Motorsports, Richard Childress of RCR, Joe Gibbs. You don't think they've had an impact on how the direction the sport has gone, but you don't see them, like you said, doing it in the public media like that. It's behind closed doors. Even Dale Earnhardt, Mike Helton talked about that, of after the first couple of being called to the hauler on a regular basis, and I'm sure Earnhardt had a lot of influence on the direction of the sport as well, but it wasn't done in that kind of public format like that, especially not carrying that, if I don't get my way, I'm going to take my ball or my car and go home.
And you know what? If I would say take your ball and go. I don't think they need Denny Hamlin to make this sport successful. You've got other teams. Like I say, Trackhouse Racing, I think, is just doing a phenomenal job of doing some creative things to work within the existing situation. Now, can there be changes made? Absolutely. Is there room for improvement? Absolutely. But Denny Hamlin has no foot to stand on to make a demand of NASCAR to change their model, or he's going to take his business and go elsewhere, is basically what he's saying. You know, you're right. The world will still turn if Denny Hamlin is not in NASCAR. The world will still turn if they don't expand their team. They're drawing a line in the sand and backing themselves into a corner, and that's just not a smart thing to do because it's not necessarily going to go all their way. I've seen NASCAR say that to drivers. We've been going on since 1947. And we're going to continue to go on, even if you're not here, Denny Hamlin. So I think he needs to get off of his, his high horse, I guess I'll put it that way, and just kind of tone it down a little bit if he wants people to really take him seriously. Right now, I find it really hard to take him seriously. And you made some good points. However, I will say this. If they don't have the details, why report something like that? Is it Denny Hamlin going to the reporter and asking him to put it out there, or is it the reporter going to Denny Hamlin? I don't really know, but I just think that if you've got nothing to report, don't put it out there, is kind of the way that should have been handled. But again, if they want to report that Denny Hamlin's making demands of NASCAR to make changes, that's just doesn't reflect well on Denny Hamlin. And again, I think it goes back to his emotional intelligence. I don't think he really has the head, or I don't want to put it that way. He just needs to take a step back and really think about what he does before he does it, because sometimes he makes himself, and he really could be making greater strides if he did things a different way. And he just keeps repeating that same thing. And that's what aggravates me, because I want to give him credit sometimes But it's hard to do it when he does these, when he does this stuff.
Well, and I'll tell you what, you know, Kyle Busch is kind of in that same spot when he's doing good things to help younger drivers, but then some of the things he does takes away from that, and some fans won't look past that. So you're right, and I can't argue that, you know, and I'm in that same boat. I am getting a little tired of hearing him, like I said, week in, week out, it's about this or it's about that. So it does make it difficult to even hear what it is and if there are valid and good points within what he's talking about, or to take him seriously, or if it's just another rant. So we'll have to see if that changes. And I know being partners with Michael Jordan, I think you notice we haven't seen that from Michael Jordan himself. So I know Mike had this a couple of weeks ago when we talked about Denny's performance, of maybe this ownership thing is being a little more distracting than what he thought as far as being on track. So that too, you know, new to this, get a handle on that of when to focus on the ownership side, how to focus on it, like you said, as well as then keep your focus on driving. You still got a job to do with the Joe Gibbs Racing, and I think he's doing a good job. We know we're going to see him come playoff time. But balancing that hat wearing, if you will, of swapping the hats back and forth. Now, I do like what you compared with, because we talked about this Trackhouse Racing, you know, coming in as a second-year team. They've gotten two victories with Ross Chastain, Daniel Suarez coming really close, and the success they're having. And I think about other teams, Colleg Racing, the way they've moved up and through the program, GMS Racing, as we've seen them develop. You don't see that same type of, like you said, screaming, help me, help me, help me. It's, we did this on our own. We're going to, if this is their rules, and they may be having conversations with NASCAR. It's just not getting publicized. And to answer that, you're right. I don't know whether or not the question was even asked of Denny Hamlin. Can you clarify what it is you're demanding? What changes you would like to see? And I think Mike put that too. Let me see if I can pull that back up real quick. Be a little more clear on what it is you're asking for. Now, whether they ran with this story on their own, or like you said, if they did get to Hamlin and got the specifics, at least ask him to clarify a little more what it is you're looking for, what changes it is, other than help my team.
Exactly. Well, again, Trackhouse Racing is... It doesn't appear that they're asking for help. They're looking for innovative ways to make things happen, and they're doing it. Even with the Reichelman thing that's going on, their Project 91, those are things that nobody else is doing, but they are doing it. They're a brand new team, and they're doing things that have never been done before. And obviously, they are talking to NASCAR. They're saying, we'd like to do this. And NASCAR's given them the go-ahead to do it. So I just think that the contrast in the way Trackhouse Racing is doing some of these things and the way Denny Hamlin is putting the face of 2311 is a stark contrast. And I think Trackhouse has got it right. I think 2311 has got it totally wrong in their approach and their way of looking at it. I follow Trackhouse at this point a lot more heavily than I would 2311.
All right. And Tommy doesn't want the All-Star race at Texas anymore. So we got two very definitive opinions on things.
That's right. We've had some soapboxes this week. But yeah, that's pretty much it. So where do we want to go from there?
Well, I'll go ahead. Oh, I hit the wrong one. I was going to say, being that I did put that up under, like you said, I started that discussion under the wrong one. Mike actually had up, it was a penalty. We'll go ahead so you can clear that out all on one. The penalty, where did it go now? I lost it again.
Yeah, I can give it here. Mike's comment is, I'm not sure how they'll call this. There have been several instances so far this year where the team managed to get the car to stop in the box and get the wheel on properly. It sounds like now that's going to be a penalty. And this is from Bob Packless. He says that NASCAR has revised its rules to say if an improperly installed wheel falls off in the pit box, it can still be a penalty. So during an event, any loss or separation of an improperly installed tire or wheel, and that can be singular or plural, from the vehicle will result in a penalty. As determined by NASCAR, improperly installed tire wheels remaining in the immediate area of the team's pit box without imposing a safety concern may result in a penalty. See Section 10 violations and disciplinary action. So that's not a penalty before, but now it is. So again, Mike goes on to say, if the car remains in the box and therefore it doesn't impede other cars on pit road and the wheel remains in control of the crew, I don't see why this should be a penalty beyond the time the crew will lose on pit road. So, what are your thoughts about that, Joe?
Well, actually, now we really do, if you want to do your time spiel here coming up at the 30 mark.
Okay, yes, we do a little spiel at this time of the night, especially for those people that are tuning in for the first time. What happens is we go off the air at exactly 10:30 Eastern Time. However, we are going to continue our conversation, and that part of the conversation will still be recorded, and it will be part of our bonus overtime material on our podcast. So what I do is when Jay and I get finished talking here, I will go out on Twitter to let you know that the podcast is now available. At that point, or sometime tomorrow, or whenever it's convenient for you, you can go to the player that's at our fanforacing.com website and fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation. So again, we make this announcement at this time of the night just so that people that are tuning in for the first time aren't taken off guard when we go off air mid-sentence, and so you'll know how you can hear the rest of that conversation. So with that, Jay, I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Mike on this, I can't think of any specific instances of, I hate to say it, but it's going to become a judgment call by NASCAR if they feel the tire just got away from them. Now, if they drop the jack and the car is pulling out and the wheel comes off and they're still in their pit area and, you know, chances are it rolls towards the wall or whatever and the crew maintains control of it, that's one thing. But I think they're getting into a window of a judgment call of, was it, you know, did they get it locked on like they're supposed to and it came off under what would be the safety issue? So we'll have to wait and see. Like I said, I can't think of a specific incident other than, like I said, if the jack drops and the car is obviously attempting to go back out on the track, or they know they didn't get the lug nut tight and they back up to try and fix it and it comes off, it's a tough call. Like I said, it's going to be a judgment call. I mean, this is kind of a created scenario, but yeah, like I said, if the jack drops, car's going to go, they realize it was loose or they didn't get it tight, the driver feels it already, backs up or stops, and that's where it comes off. Yes, technically it was not secured, but also they were trying to correct it before they got out on the track. I understand NASCAR saying, hey, at that point we can penalize you. I think it will be a situational kind of call, whether or not it became the safety issue and impeded, whether it be the tire goes into pit road, out onto the track, whatever. So I think we'll have to wait and see until that situation develops. NASCAR is just leaving that window open of, hey, we have the right to penalize you there if we feel it is a neglect or a mistake in losing that wheel versus just an uncontrolled wheel within pit road.
Yeah, there are some implications here in the way that this is worded. And it says, excuse me, some of the key things that they say in this document is that the remaining, as determined by NASCAR, improperly installed tires and wheels remaining in the immediate area of the team's pit box, even without posting a safety concern, may result in a penalty. So what they're saying is that it's possible that they may try to get out of the pit box and realize that there's a mistake and that wheel comes off or whatever. NASCAR could still call that a penalty, even if they're not on the racetrack. And I think that that's, I can see this both ways. If you think that there was no safety risk there, maybe they won't call it, but they do say in the immediate area of the team's pit box without posing a safety concern may still result in a penalty. So they're saying even if it's not a safety issue, it could still result in a penalty. I think you're right, Jay. I think it's a situational thing that they're going to look at. And if they feel that a penalty should be assessed, they're going to do it. And they've opened the door for that to happen. And the only thing we can do at this point is to wait and see how that situational thing evolves with NASCAR. And the teams aren't going to know this either until it actually happens. And NASCAR's been known to do that with other things as well. I think we talked about it a little bit the other night when we said they can't anticipate every single thing that's going to happen. So in some cases, I think they have to write the rule in the way that they've written this one because they don't know what's going to happen. They have to have it happen before they know how they're going to respond to it. I think that's why they had to write the rule the way that they wrote it. If you think back to what Scott Miller said in the post-race audio that we listened to on Monday night, he said that they had to make a rule change that Tuesday because of not knowing different things that can happen. So they do a Tuesday wrap-up, and this is what they decided needed to happen. So I think right now it's hard for us to really make a comment fully on it until we see how they implement it.
Well, and I was still trying to just in my head put wrap around an idea of why this would even be a situation. But I think I can come with one. This past weekend, we saw Kyle Busch having a tire issue. And now I'm not saying it was a wheel coming off. I think it was flat. But we'll just use that as an example. If he feels that tire is coming off, he was coming to pit road. Unfortunately, he didn't make it. Ross Chastain run over him, literally. So let's just say he's got a tire coming loose, gets to pit road. As he gets to his pit stall is when it comes off. He's in his pit stall. Wheel comes off and rolls into their pit. They grab it, put a new one on. Okay, no harm, no foul as far as it affecting anybody else on the track. That would maybe be an example where NASCAR would say, okay, you got into your pit stall and, you know, got it as it came off or it wasn't an issue. But the penalty would still possibly, they may call it a penalty, as they put it, because it was loose and coming off, you know. So I think that, like I said, I was just trying to envision a scenario where this would be applicable, and that could be one. Like you say, if that's what was happening with Kyle's wheel, he's coming to pit road, he gets there. As he gets to pit road is when it comes off. Okay, it's not a factor. It's not out on the track, anything else. He's within his pit stall, but it still did come loose. So that's, I think, maybe a scenario where that this rule could possibly come into play where NASCAR, again, it's situational. Does it need to be penalized? You know, was it because of damage that happened on the track? And I think that's one that they need to look at. So far from what we've seen, we haven't seen any where the wheel came off was because of damage to the car, that they're involved in something and then it came off. You know, it came off while they were on their own. So we haven't seen that. That's another scenario where that their judgment and ruling on this is going to come into play. Two cars banging together, they separate, keep going. All of a sudden, one of them has a wheel come off. If they decide to appeal a penalty, that might be their argument that battle contact on the track is what caused it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an interesting scenario. And I think your example is a good one. That could be exactly where that came up, that they decided they needed to put that in writing. And so they have now, and teams are aware of it. So we'll see how that plays out. Another thought that occurred to me as you were talking is that, and we've talked about this before too, these teams have been on the learning curve. We've gone through half of the season, regular season now, and we're still seeing issues with these tires not being properly installed. So this could be another way for NASCAR to really put an earnest on teams to really get this under control so that they're not still going through a learning curve by the end of this season. I understand this is a tough one, but when you consider that so many of the teams have not had any issues, why is it only certain teams seem to be having these issues? Those teams in particular really need to get a handle on it and get it fixed within their organization. And this might be NASCAR's way of trying to make that happen. Just another thought.
Well, and I know as we had that discussion about whether or not it was really an issue with the numbers, and I didn't save it. I meant to save it and send it to Mike. I think it was Dave Moody. You think about it, of 36 teams, four tires per team, and I don't remember X number of races. I think this was at like race 10 or 11. Four per team, just give it four pit stops per race. 11, 12 races in, the percentage of tires that had come off was less than 1%. Now, does that mean it doesn't need to be addressed? Absolutely not, because it is a safety issue and they don't want to see it at all. But it overall, it was not a major problem. And like you said, it seems to be selective to a particular few teams that have had it repeatedly anyway. So, NASCAR is going to look at it, keep an eye on it. And again, I think like we mentioned with the sponsorship and everything else, NASCAR is trying to help these teams of what can we do or change to make it better, mm-hmm. or see, you know, whether it be the pit gun, the way the lug nut is on, whatever it be, that they'll look at it. But if it's happening, it's still a penalty. And that is something we won't get back into that. But I think Denny Hamlin had a point with the All-Star race possibly of, hey, a rule is a rule, got to enforce it. Whether or not that rule was applicable at the All-Star race, don't know.
Yeah, because they've got that different set of rules. So, yeah, it's a whole different ball game, if you will. So we'll see how it plays out. But let's go ahead and move on to the next topic.
Okay, we already talked about this a little bit, or at least got mentioned. Trackhouse Racing, slide up to this one. Mike had put it up, coming from Adam Stern. Team Trackhouse today is announcing it has launched a program called Project 91, part-time third car, the number 91, to bring global stars of racing to NASCAR a few times a year, starting this year. And then I added to that with, and then it came from Bob Pockris, Kimi Raikkonen. And I'm trying to remember what he races. I know he's a IMSA star, maybe? A road racing...
sports car, IMSA.
Okay,
yeah,
sports car and IMSA driver.
Kimi Raikkonen.
I've heard the name come from the 24 Hours of Daytona, now that you say that. So he'll be in the car at Watkins Glen. That's the first one I've seen him announce. So, and I know Mike put it up. And he said it's pretty cool to see global stars get a shot in what I would expect to be a legitimately fast equipment. Usually they're stuck in some, we'll say junk
car.
Not what Mike put. Yeah, not what Mike put, but a junk car that wouldn't crack the top 20, even with Jeff Gordon in his prime.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm glad that he responded to that. I kind of agree. I think this is really a creative way to bring other drivers into the sport to create interest in NASCAR. I just really admire what Justin Marks is doing at Trackhouse Racing. I think he's a visionary, and he knows how to make these things happen. He's a former driver, and I think he's got some great ideas. This is the same guy that when he was having trouble getting a charter, he made the decision to buy out Chip Ganassi Racing, made the offer, they agreed to it, and nobody else had done that before. But he came up with that idea and did it. Now he's come up with this idea, and he's doing it. And I think he's doing it with NASCAR's blessing. So he's talked to NASCAR about it. He hasn't made a big deal about these conversations. Nobody knew about Project 91, at least to my knowledge. Maybe others did know and just haven't said anything yet. But this was news today. This was a big deal. So I like the way Justin Marks is going about his business. He's an innovator, and he's doing some really great things with Trackhouse Racing. This is what I'd like to see more of, maybe from other teams as well. We won't mention which ones, but I just think from other teams.
Right. We won't talk about that. Okay. You're right. I mean, as a whole, you got to admire what Trackhouse Racing has done, Justin Marks and Pitbull. And we heard that from the beginning, that Justin Marks was bringing about a different business model to make this happen. And we've seen that come to fruition. Now, with this, I like the idea. When I first read this, when Mike put it up, I didn't catch the fact that it said the global stars, as you will, until I came across the one from Kiko Rakonen. That kind of just adds to it. My only concern is to have it not take away from their two full-time Cup teams. And we've seen this in the past. Anytime you do expansion to a third team or an alliance or anything, you just hope you don't see it take away from your primary, which is your two teams, Daniel Suarez and Ross Chastain. So that's my only concern. But overall, I do see it as a good thing. And, I thought back to, we saw this in the past. I know NASCAR has some limitations. And I'm sure, like you said, that Justin Marks has gone through NASCAR and made sure that what he's doing is on the up and up and going to be legal and okay. Teams used to have what they called the research and development team in the Xfinity. It's called the All-Star team because they bring in top NASCAR or top drivers a lot of times in a rotating basis. To make sure that's legal and okay with how they're doing it, they're not over the four-car limit, so that obviously keeps them within that. They're going to have to do it without a charter on those select races, and they're willing to take that chance. And yeah, like Mike said, I think it's cool to see that we're going to see some other interactions, the crossover. We've talked about that on so many different levels, no matter what sport it be, from football to basketball, owners or whatever that are getting involved or ones that have interest in NASCAR and bringing that fan base crossing over. I mean, you got to have some basketball fans that are seeing what Michael Jordan's doing in racing that maybe weren't race fans and vice versa. So I see all good things with the exception, like I said, I just don't want to see it hurt their effort because right now they are a top championship contending team. I know Daniel Suarez isn't where he wants to be in points and in the playoffs locked in as of yet. But look at Ross Chastain. He's been talked about as one of the top four, the final four, contending for the championship already.
Yeah, it really is great. And, you're right. You bring up a valid concern If they bring in this third team, will it take away from what Ross Chastain and Daniel Suarez can accomplish within the organization? I just sense that Justin Marks is doing some good things. I that's the only possible negative thing to this. I like the crossover. I just saw a fan on Twitter today post something to the effect, and I'm very much paraphrasing here, but the concern was so many NASCAR fans admire what's happening in F1, but we never seem to get that respect back from F1 drivers having any kind of admiration or respect for the NASCAR drivers. And I think this guy was trying to figure out why. Why is that? Because NASCAR drivers are certainly talented drivers. They have to be athletic in order to be successful. And it just doesn't seem right that they don't get the respect that they deserve. Well, this is a great way to bring other drivers into the sport, put a highlight on them individually. But also, it occurs to me that they might have a curiosity about this next generation car that NASCAR has put out. The kind of racing that we've seen this year with the next gen car, there might be a curiosity from them, from somebody like a Kimi Räikkönen that is really interested in seeing what this car is all about. And this is going to be an opportunity for them to drive it and maybe even give some feedback about it. So I can't wait to see what happens with this crossover, and I think it's a good idea. And you're right, Jay. I hope it doesn't affect the organization in a bad way.
Well, and I'm not even going to get into that argument of Formula One versus NASCAR. I think that kind of goes both ways to a degree. And I'm one that, because personally, as a huge NASCAR fan, I say race fan. Yeah, IndyCar would be next on my list. Formula One, I don't even know if I've watched a total of 30 minutes, total of any Formula One race. So, you know, I'm one that kind of goes that way. It's just not my thing. I'll put it that way. It's not that I don't have respect for them. There are certain aspects of it that I think when it comes to, and even I know Danica Patrick talked about it with the IndyCar, going down pit road. That was something she had to adjust to because an IndyCar, they have a button, they push it, it goes pit road speed. You got to maintain that in NASCAR. Now, does that mean that Formula One drivers or IndyCar drivers don't have talent? No, I'm not saying that because, a couple of drivers have talked about 220 miles an hour at the Brickyard. I wouldn't be able to do. I did 60 or 70 at Atlanta, and, yeah, I'm hoping it was sweat and my pants weren't necessarily dry when I got out. But the excitement to it, you know, I don't know that I could handle 220 miles an hour. So, yeah, there is talent there. It is different, okay? I'll just say that. You know, whatever it is, you got to adapt to what it is. I'm not going to pick and choose. So with that, though, bringing these stars in, again, the crossover thing, I say 95% good there, and that the other isn't a bad, it is just a concern. Like I said, you don't want it to be a distraction. You want it to be a benefit. And I think there are some good benefits to it. I just don't want to see that distraction or it hurt the main team. The more I think about this, we talk about Trackhouse and what they've done. The other teams I mentioned, GMS Racing, Colleg Racing, we saw them go through the Truck Series or the Xfinity Series up to the Cup level. Trackhouse came in directly at the level and to make that happen. I don't want to take away from Colleg or GMS, but, yeah, they really did. Started at the top and are achieving success within that two-year period. So not to say it's any better. I mean, GMS, that was the way they went about it in Colleg Racing. But Trackhouse really has just stepped right into the top level and come out swinging. So kudos to them. I'd like to see them continue with that. And I think, again, this Project 91 is a good thing overall.
Okay. Okay, we'll go on to another topic here. Okay, now Toby Christie has a thing. Well, no, let me go to this PJ Compound thing. Bob Hockless reported on Twitter that NASCAR and Speedway Motorsports put down resin at Charlotte earlier this week and then ran the tire dragging over it. It doesn't plan to do any additional track treatment for this weekend. Now, I've heard some conversation on SiriusXM about the PJ compound that we're used to putting down hearing as being put down on the track to create a stickiness, if you will, for the tires to get more grip on certain tracks. And what I learned on SiriusXM, and if I remember, it was on Godfather Moody's show, the PJ compound, what they learned is over the years, this PJ compound that they put on the track to get grip is now doing the exact opposite as it builds up on the surface of the track. It's made this track extremely slip and doesn't really go away. So the only way that they can combat that is with this resin, which they have found out is better at creating the grip that the drivers are looking for. And so the days of having PJ compound put on the tracks are pretty much over. So they used the resin at the All-Star race, and there weren't real good reviews about that race. But I wanted to get your thoughts about the fact that they're not going to use that PJ compound anymore and that resin's going to be the way to go moving forward, at least for now.
Well, I wish I had a better memory when it comes to this because, and I don't remember where I heard it from, but the PJ1 compound somewhere, I want to say it was Larry McReynolds, but I'm not 100% here, that was kind of a company and they have different products. And one of the ones I know, whether we called it the PJ1, we used to make fun of that, or what the new name to it was, VH1 or VT something, all of that it was one company and there were different products. Now, like you said, what they're calling the resin now, it seems to be what they're going forward with. From what I heard, it does seem to be as closer to the tire compound as the tires just running on the track and tire wear running, rubbing into the track. This resin is closest to that. So that's what drivers are looking for. And we know that's important because the ARCA series run, there are some drivers that won't go out immediately and practice because they want that whatever tire ARCA Menards series is using to wear in or off the track before mm-hmm. they go out and practice because it's different. Now, I know I heard with the resin, there are some things that factor in of the temperature, how much weather there is, and then the temperature, how that can change, that it's a rather temperature sensitive or dampness sensitive when it comes to having it have been rained on. And I hadn't heard that going back to this PJ1, if that's what you want to call it, whatever compound they were using before. I know that was one that, you're right, driver said was very slick. I didn't realize that it was carrying over as it built up and stayed on the track that you're saying they talked about today. I wasn't in the vehicle a lot today, so missed out a lot of that on SiriusXM. But
actually it wasn't today. I think I heard that conversation on my drive down to Texas, so it was before the All-Star race that they were talking about it.
Okay. So I think that's one that NASCAR, again, you're getting feedback from the drivers. You're listening to the ones that are talking to them and saying, hey, here's our concern, not screaming and jumping up and down and crying, but we're not going to talk about that as far as changing it. Finding mm-hmm. that best possible solution for the best possible racing for the drivers, for the fans, for the sport. And so, yeah, I'm glad to see that they are, like you said, working on it, adjusting to it, picking the one that works best.
Yep, and so I'm excited. I know that there could be some downfalls to this resin as well. Time always tells the rest of the story when it comes to that. But this seems to be working a lot better. And I just thought it was interesting that the PJ1 compound that they were using actually has a negative effect over time. We might find the same thing with the resin. Who knows? But we just heard PJ1 in that compound and whatever they were calling it from week to week for such a long time. It's just interesting that now it's kind of a defunct way of doing business.
I say overall, the resin, like I said, from what I've heard from drivers, is the most compatible and seems to be working the best. And we mentioned the tire dragon. For those that don't know, again, dirt tracks actually use this too to smooth out a track, not necessarily put rubber into it, but just running that across, again, especially on newer tracks, get that rubber built into the track that they haven't had after years of racing on it, that some of that does stay within the track service. So maybe this PJ one they're finding now, you know, isn't as compatible. It's staying in the track, and like you said, making it a little slick. Again, it might be the adjustment too with the newer cars, that's the difference, the next gen car and how they handle on it with the bigger wheelbase, tire size and wheelbase. Don't know for sure, but they've decided they're going in this direction. Like I said, I think NASCAR is doing a great job of staying on top of it and trying to stay ahead of it, if you will, and finding something that works better, even though that was working good. I know some fans and drivers maybe prefer that it not be put on at all. But again, you're never going to make everybody happy. They're making what they feel is the best decision for the sport as a whole.
Yes, indeed. I don't have anything really to add to that. So if you want to move on to another topic, that would be fine with me.
Well, I think we might have to wait until Monday. We got, 2 minutes left here.
Oh, that's right. You're right. We're winding down already. Okay, so we are approaching the top of the hour. So let's go ahead and do the across the table thing.
I mentioned this weekend, big racing all over the place, Memorial Day weekend. Keep in mind those that have sacrificed and the reason for the weekend, get out and enjoy it. Myself, you can follow me on Michael Hoosman on Facebook, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. Weather permitting, I know Magnolia Motor Speedway here, the home of the Black Ice, the west side of town, is having a Crate Racing USA Sportsman Division World Championship. I myself am going to take a little trip down to Jackson Motor Speedway, your Capital City Raceway, for our weekly racing down there. Wherever it is you can, if you enjoy it, get out and enjoy one of your short tracks.
Yes, indeed. That's a very good notification. And the fans everywhere, I think, are going to the local short tracks and have been asking for that for a long time. So I love the streaming services that are available now to help support our support of the short track racing across the country. Okay, with that, a big shout out to our listeners for tuning in. We really appreciate it. We did have we didn't have a guest tonight, but we do have some pre-recorded audio from Max Gutierrez, who's making his debut in the Camping World Truck Series at Charlotte Motor Speedway this weekend with AM Racing. So watch for him to be on the track. You can also go and listen to his interview. For those who speak Spanish, he even received and answered a question in the Spanish language, so that was kind of cool as well. Also, a big shout-out to Jay for being co-host here tonight and staying on for the Hot Topics conversation. Always enjoy working with you, and definitely looking forward to the weekend of racing this weekend at Charlotte Motor Speedway, starting with the ARCA Menards Series all the way through the NASCAR Cup Series, racing on Sunday, and not to mention the Indianapolis 500 that's also taking place this weekend. There's a lot to race to, so enjoy your racing weekend. Please be safe and enjoy the time with your family and friends as we honor those in the military this weekend. And we'll look forward to talking to you when we come back on Tuesday, not Monday, but on Tuesday, May the 31st, for our next show. We do right now have Joe Graff Jr. scheduled for the 9 p.m. segment, and we'll look forward to chatting with him after the race this weekend at Charlotte. So with that, Jay, I think we're ready to call it a night.
All right, you're right. I think I said Monday for Hot Topics. That just means it'll be even hotter come Tuesday. I forgot we were moving to the day this week, so they'll be even hotter come Tuesday.
Okay. I'm sure we'll have a lot to talk about. Good night, everybody.
Yeah.